Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew.
And my name is Anna.
And you're listening to the Culips English Podcast. Welcome back to Culips. You're listening to Chatterbox, which is the Culips series designed for intermediate and advanced English learners. And here we present natural, unscripted conversations about a wide range of interesting topics. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Anna. Hello there, Anna. How's it going?
I'm great. Thank you, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good, Anna. And I'm excited that today we can finally continue part two of the episode that we planned to record and release a long time ago, at the start of the year, actually. But we just didn't have time to do it. And we left our listeners probably waiting on the edge of their seats, Anna, because the last episode that we recorded was all about trend predictions coming out of South Korea for the year 2024. And Anna, do you remember any of those trends? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I remember something around... Ooh, I think you've put me on the spot there, Andrew. It was quite a while ago now, but there were a few trends on there.
Yeah, there were five. I think there were five that we talked about. And actually, I cheated because I had to go back and look as well. But the two that popped out to me that I remember, and as soon as you hear them, you'll remember them as well. There were hexagonal humans, that trend prediction. And also, I believe it was called millennial hubbies. So... like home husbands, that kind of trend prediction. And there were some other ones as well. But what we're going to do for this episode is shift our focus. And we're not going to talk about trend predictions coming out of Asia, but we're going to go to the Western world. And we have exactly the same thing, trend predictions for the year 2024 that were made and are specific for a Western target. So these predictions are coming out of America and they're specific for the American population. So I think it'll be really interesting to talk about this, Anna. We'll notice some similarities and some differences. And even though we're, you know, well into 2024 now it's the spring, I still think that it's okay to talk about these because they're kind of general predictions for the future. So don't worry too much about it being like a New Year's episode, everyone. It's not really that important that you talk about it right at the start of the year. Anyways, before we get into everything, I do want to remind you listeners out there that there's a transcript and a study guide available for this episode to all Culips members. And using the study guide while you listen is an excellent way to improve your learning experience with us. Now, by becoming a Culips member, you'll not only be supporting us, but you'll also enable us to continue to create English lessons for people all around the world. Membership also comes with a ton of other bonuses and perks, such as ad-free audio, access to our members-only series, which is called The Fluency Files. You'll get an invitation to our monthly member live streams, access to our member-only channel on our Discord server, and so much more. I can't even tell you all of the benefits and bonuses because there are too many. But if you want to see the full list, and if you want to sign up and become a member, then please just visit our website, culips.com, or you can follow the link that we'll put in the description for this episode.
Lastly, we wanted to give a shout out to our listener, Alex, who left us a lovely comment and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Alex wrote, "I've been listening to your podcast for quite some time now, and as you can imagine, it didn't take me very long to get really fond of your work. I seldom miss your uploads, and I'm a big fan. I'm a passionate learner of English and find your podcast really, really, in capital letters and brackets, helpful. Thank you a bunch, and I'll make sure to spread the word about you and the great work that you're doing. Sending you my best wishes." Thank you so much, Alex. That's a lovely comment. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for your support, Alex. Those kind of comments really make our day, don't they, Anna? We love hearing this kind of feedback from our listeners. And there are too many reviews and comments for us to give shout outs to everybody at the start of every episode. But guys, we do really appreciate the support. And if you do enjoy listening to Q-Lips, please do leave us a nice review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform, because they do help with the algorithm and they do help to spread the word about Q-Lips to other learners from around the world. And yeah, keep it up. Keep them coming, please. And with that being said, Anna, I think we should jump in and get started with the main conversation topic for today's episode, which is, again, the trends that have been made for 2024 and for the future coming out of America. And there are 5 different trends that we'll talk about. We'll just go through each of them one by one here, guys, and we'll describe them, tell you what they are, and then Anna and I will chime in with our 2 cents and give our opinion, and we'll progress through the episode that way. Anna, do you want to kick things off and introduce what trend number one is?
Sure. The first trend that we've got on our list today, guys, is neo-hedonism. And this is really a trend where we're talking about consumers prioritizing meaningful experiences. And a lot of the stuff that me and Andrew looked at, it's talking about how consumers have changed post-pandemic, especially. So let's say, for example, people and consumers, what they're predicting is that people are prioritizing things like, let's say, concerts, the big concerts that have been around recently, Taylor Swift, Beyonce. People are paying thousands of pounds to go and have these experiences, or maybe immersive art exhibitions, and people want to spend more money doing things rather than, let's say, saving for retirement or saving for a rainy day. I'm not really sure. So people want experiences rather than spending money on saving or saving money, let's say. I wonder, Andrew, if you think what you think about that trend. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I just wanted to back up just for a moment and describe this word hedonism, because it's an advanced word. Maybe some people will know it, but I think many of our listeners won't. So hedonism is a philosophy. Usually if something ends with ism, that means it's a philosophy or a belief system. And hedonism is the philosophy of having fun. Could we say, Anna? It's like the pursuit of pleasure, right? Of enjoying yourself and feeling good. So hedonism is that school of thought, that kind of philosophy that thinks you should live your life to maximize pleasure as much as possible. And neo, spelt N-E-O, this is a prefix that means a new take or a new look on this philosophy. So neo-hedonism then is this kind of new idea, this new take on hedonism, which is essentially that you should prioritize spending your money to enjoy your life instead of saving your money for retirement or for maybe saving up to buy a house or, you know, some responsible thing like that. And you gave some great examples there, Anna. People paying tons of money to see concerts, people traveling a lot these days, spending money on expensive art installations, all of these things. Consumerism is really rampant these days. And to me, I think this makes a lot of sense. Even I felt this a little bit during the pandemic. There's that old cliched expression, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And during the pandemic, I think a lot of us were trapped, right? We felt trapped. We felt lonely. We felt like maybe I wasted my life up until now. And will the future ever be the same as it was before? We had these kinds of thoughts. And coming out of the pandemic, you're like, oh, okay, I got to take that trip that I've always dreamed of doing. I might never have another chance. Who knows? It was kind of a wake-up call for us to follow our dreams and do what we want and not really care too much about the future, live more in the now. So yeah, I think definitely this rings true for me. And it might also be like the economy might be involved as well. I think, you know, it seems weird to talk about spending money when we see global inflation and prices rising around the world, in many countries around the world, at least. But I think some people, Now, we've talked about this before on different Chatterbox episodes. Some people have kind of given up on saving for those traditional things that you buy in life, like a home or an apartment or a car, because they're just sort of out of many people's leagues right now. It's so expensive for real estate, for example, around the world, that you're just like, okay, there's no way I can ever afford a house in the city that I want to live in. So instead of doing that, I'm just going to go on vacation every year, and I'm going to see all the concerts that I want to see, and I'm going to enjoy my life that way. And I don't know. I just have a gut feeling that that might be a little bit involved in this as well.
Absolutely. And I think I totally understand that in a way, because, you know, when you feel like something is so out of your reach, you're like, well, what's the point? What's the point saving money? But for me, maybe I've gone against this trend somewhat, because in 2021, I turned 30. And when I turned 30, all my priorities started changing. I'm sure you guys, maybe if you've turned 30 at some point, things start to change. You start to think about the future more. And so I think there is an element of, you know, when you're young and you're in your early 20s, sure, you want to go out, you want to do stuff, you want to travel, you want to go to concerts. And then when you get a little bit older, you kind of realize, yeah, that doesn't last forever though. And for me, we were talking about this just before the episode, Andrew, there's an expression or saying in English where it's live fast, die young. And well, actually, you know, in Spain, for example, the average life expectancy is, I think, 82 years old. So let's say most people are going to live till they're like 80 or 70, in which case it's more like live slow, die old, in which case this type of model of I'm going to spend all my money and I'm not going to save for the future, it sounds great in the moment, but that worries me for me personally, but also for others, is that in a way, I feel like we're being tricked to be like, yeah, you want experiences, you want to go out and you want to experience the world. But actually, it's like, but we still have a future too. In fact, we're probably going to live longer than a lot of people now, because maybe there'll be health advances, etc. So it scares me that there's not that dialogue about saving money, the future. But then I also think it's part of like, when you're young, you don't want to think about when you're 85. You want to think about going to a Taylor Swift concert. So I think there's also that element of just people being young. And that is kind of just what you do when you're younger.
Sure. Yeah, completely. And just because this is a trend prediction, it doesn't mean that it's a good idea, right? I think probably for a financial planner or somebody would tell you, no, 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 this is a bad idea. You should always save your money for a rainy day, save for retirement. But yeah, I guess they're predicting, the people who made this trend prediction are suggesting that going forward, more people will be willing to spend their money on experiences than we've seen in the past. I think that's the main takeaway here.
I think, and just a little thing to add before we move on, is, as you said before, like, a lot of people have less money. So maybe in the past, it was a question of, I want to go to the Taylor Swift concert and I'm going to save a little bit of money as well. But now it's like either or. It's like either you go to the Taylor Swift concert or you save your money. You can't do both. You know, so I think people are in a bit of a sticky spot, you know, a bit of a tricky situation. But like you said, a trend doesn't necessarily mean it's good. But I would like there to be also a dialogue about, you know, making sure you're thinking about the future. It doesn't have to mean you're putting thousands of pounds into a pension fund when you're 22. But, you know, I would like there to be also that opposing dialogue as well, you know, to this like live fast, die young trend.
Sure. I have some friends who are really responsible like that and started saving for retirement even when they were in high school. And I gotta say, I'm jealous. They were they were smart.
Yeah, they were ahead of the pack. They were smart. They were the smart ones.
For sure. Let's move on to trend number two. Trend number two is supporting brands with positive impact. So this trend prediction is suggesting that in the future, consumers are going to become more conscious of their impact of their purchases. And because of this, they'll look to buy things that are more sustainable or they're sourced responsibly. Responsible sourcing is all about ethical purchases. So, you know, often you can look at the tag maybe of a t-shirt. You want to buy a new t-shirt and you can see where it was made, right? And often, unfortunately, it's not made in a place where labor standards or human rights are really respected. So sometimes we can feel pretty guilty. I know I feel guilty sometimes if I look at the tag of a piece of clothing and I think, oh, this is probably built in a sweatshop in a country that doesn't really pay its workers very fairly or doesn't respect human rights. But responsible sourcing is maybe about all of the things that go into the production of that t-shirt, the cotton, the labor, and doing it in a way that respects those things, that respects the environment, respects human rights, respects labor, pays workers fairly, all of those things. That's what responsible sourcing means. And so going forward, these American researchers who made this trend prediction are thinking that consumers are going to pay more attention to this and are going to consider this more and more when they make their purchases. Now, Anna, we were chatting about this a little bit before we started recording, and we didn't have as much to say about this trend prediction. I really don't see this too much in my day-to-day life right now. I mean, it might change in the future, who knows, but right now, I don't see it too much. How about you?
I occasionally buy things where I am thinking specifically about a brand in Spain that makes clothes. And they, one of their key selling points is that the clothes are made in Spain and Portugal. And, you know, I sort of think, okay, well, that's great. I want to support that. So maybe that's one time I made a decision, but most of the time, my daily purchases, I'm looking for a quality product, not necessarily that they're, I'm not sort of going, you know, into detail about the company. But one thing I really do is I do buy locally, and I've always been really big on that. So I go to the local fruit shop. I go to supermarkets as well, obviously, but I do try to go to local places, local coffee shops, for example, because I really believe it's like, if you want these things in your neighborhood, you have to use them. If you want these independent shops, you have to go there and give them money and help them grow and to keep them. Otherwise, they'll just leave. Okay. Or butchers, for example, or florists, independent florists. So that is one thing that I'm really big on, but it's less about the ethics. It's more about supporting my neighborhood. I don't know about you. What do you think, Andrew? Have you ever made a purchase thinking about the positive impact?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I buy clothes sometimes, I often look to try and find clothes that are not just produced in a sweatshop and that are, you know, as much as possible, maybe made in Canada or made in America. But to be honest, it's hard to do. And it's often like so much more expensive that I can't do it for everything that I buy. I can do it from time to time, but it's really hard to do often. I'm totally on the same page as you when it comes to supporting local businesses. And I completely agree that it's like use it or lose it in your neighborhood. If there's a cafe that you like, if there's a butcher that does a good job, if there's a dry cleaner, anything that's in your neighborhood that's like a small independent local business, you have to go there. You have to spend your money in your neighborhood or else these businesses will fail and then you won't have those cool, convenient services in your neighborhood. So I'm totally on the same page as you with that. I also do try to shop at local markets instead of the big chains, but I'm trying to think from an American point of view. I think these days, you know, I'm not an American, but I do watch enough TV that I see advertisements and stuff coming out of America. These days, a lot of brands are connected to some kind of social issue. Maybe it's about fighting racism. Maybe it's about LGBTQ rights, you know, something regarding that. And also American society these days is very tribal. So it's really a polarized society with kind of two big camps, right? Broadly, you have a conservative camp and you have a more liberal camp. And depending on what camp you're in, you support a product or don't support a product. There was a huge controversy over the last year with a beer brand, Bud Light. I'm sure a lot of listeners will have heard of that story. You know, I think maybe that's part of it. And since we don't live in America, you live in Spain, I live in South Korea, we don't really see that as much. But I'm thinking that this trend is more in line with that. And going forward, you may see more and more companies support a kind of social issue or political issue to try and get the trust and the support of the people who support those political issues. So it's almost like the companies are latching on to those social issues to try and get customers for free, almost. At the same time, they're alienating half the country, but they're getting half of the country to support them. So I guess if they did the math and it worked out in their favor, they could jump on and support one of those issues.
Okay, great. Should we move on and have a look at the third trend, Andrew?
Yeah, let's do it, because I think we have a lot more to say about this one, which is personal well-being. Anna, do you want to introduce what this trend prediction is all about?
Sure. I mean, guys, you probably are familiar with the term personal well-being, but really this trend about what they're predicting, and me and Andrew spoke about this before, it's, you know, personal well-being is something that's been on the agenda for a while. But what they're predicting with this trend is that there's going to be an even more intensified focus on psychological, emotional, social, and financial well-being, mainly, again, coming from the post-pandemic, you know, how we changed during the pandemic, and that we're really focused on how we are, our stress levels, our work-life balance, etc. And another thing they note about this trend is that perhaps people are going to be spending more money on things like spa treatments, meditation, mental health services, maybe things like therapy, for example, or types of products that help you enhance your mood, maybe like music apps, but really anything that improves your personal well-being, as we said before, and how you can integrate that into your daily lives. One of the examples they get, Andrew, and I was going to ask you because I love mine, is they said that smartwatch ownership is massively on the rise and that more people going forward are probably going to buy more technology like this. And people are tracking everything obsessively, sleep, steps, everything. Now, I love my smartwatch, but I only really use it for my steps. I really count my steps. I'm super obsessed with that.
How many are you at per day?
I like to do 10,000 a day, even though apparently that's a complete myth, that limit. This has kind of become a thing that you're supposed to do 10,000 steps every day, but it actually just came out of thin air. It's not based on any scientific research. It was just a kind of finger in the air. Yeah, 10,000 steps. Actually, what they say is that people should be doing much more than 10,000.
Really?
Yeah, but with our lifestyles, it's really difficult to, it's not a bad target to meet. 10,000, but actually they were sort of saying that hunters and gatherers are doing, like, I don't know, 17,000 steps a day or nearly 20,000 steps a day. But obviously most people are not hunters and gatherers right now, so it's hard for us to sort of match that. Do you have a smartwatch, Andrew?
Yeah, I do, because I'm a runner. So I have a Garmin brand watch, which is one of those fancy ones. Now, they range in price from just a couple $100s all the way up to over $1,000. I have the lowest end model, but it's amazing. I've had it for several years now and I love it. And I really deep dive into the data. It's one of the first things I do every day when I wake up is I check my sleep, how much deep sleep I got, my sleep cycles. It has this function called a body battery, and it tells you your score of what it thinks your condition is for the day. So if I look at my body battery and it's high, like in the 80s or 90s, then it kind of puts me in a really good mood and sets me up for a good day. I'm like, ah, I'm all recharged. I'm ready to take on the day. And if it's low, then it's really depressing. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should go back to bed for a little bit, or I have to drink an extra cup of coffee. I have a friend who got so obsessed with his Garmin stats that he ended up deleting the app off of his phone because he said it was messing with his mental health, looking at the body battery and his score. If it wasn't high enough, he would just, you know, be depressed about it all day. So to get back to what you were saying about smart gadgets, there are rings now that you can buy that do the same kind of thing, track your sleep, track your steps. So if you don't like the fashion and the look of a smartwatch, you can do it with a ring. I think this is going to be a huge, huge trend going forward. The writing's on the wall pretty much for this one. As we get better technology, I can just see it expanding. And I've heard about people now that are using devices to monitor their blood sugar, their blood pressure. And, you know, I'm interested in trying both of those, to be honest. I don't think they're available for for consumers in Korea yet, but if they are, or when they are, then definitely I'm thinking about trying those kinds of things out, because I really do enjoy following the data and the statistics about my health with these kind of devices.
Yeah, I've seen those. I would love to do that as well, especially the blood sugar one. I think that's going to be a big trend. I don't think it's available in many places, you're right, but they're growing really fast. So hopefully it'll be available in more places soon. Another example that we saw when we were looking at these trends was things like natural energy boosters. So rather than just drinking water, for example, people are adding in these different types of like electrolytes or vitamins. Also, another big trend that was in one of the articles we were reading was about taking digital detoxes, eating healthy food, or I don't know, it's all kind of the same stuff. But for me personally, this is where I'm going to give my two cents. For me, it's like, it's all great. Anything that makes you feel healthier for me is a good thing. But for me, a lot of these things are just, it's just another fad. I'm traditionalist with this. It's like, drink enough water, eat healthily, sleep well, do a little bit of exercise. It's not that complicated. And all of these things for me are just about like making things more complicated. And I was saying to Andrew before, it was like, you know, you feel like nowadays, another thing that's been really trendy, and I think will probably continue, is this idea of like ice baths and saunas. And it's like, if you don't have a cold shower in the morning, you're a bad person. I'm like, okay, let's just relax for a second here. All right. This is one thing I'm not signing up to. If it helps you, then great. But I mean, I'm not having an ice cold shower in the morning before I go to work. It's just not happening. So for me, these are fads. If it helps you, great, no problem with it. But for me, it's just repurposing the old thing, which is eat healthily, do exercise, sleep well. Those are the core things at the end of the day.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think a lot of these are trends and fads, especially in regards to using the sauna and using cold showers and ice baths. I don't know about our listeners out there, but guys, this has been a huge trend on many, many different podcasts, health podcasts, on YouTube videos. It's a huge fad in the States and in the Western world right now, is hitting up the sauna and hitting up the ice bath. There are three doctors that I listen to via podcasts that are all into like health and exercise and fitness, longevity, all of these things. Dr. Rhonda, Dr. Peter, and Dr. Andrew, these three famous podcasters. And they all just harp on and on about the benefits of ice baths and the benefits of saunas. And I think like they're too disconnected from the real world. Like, I just live in this small little house. I can't install a sauna in my home. I can't install an ice bath. I don't know. So it's like this funny trend, but it's a trend that's like a lot of rich people seem to be talking about online. And for the regular everyday folk, it's funny. I've seen on YouTube a lot of people trying to install like these saunas, these portable saunas that go up to your neckline. And it's just for your body in this little inflatable swimming pool type of thing. And it's just kind of ridiculous. I don't know. I'm sure it's good. I'm sure it's beneficial, but not so easy for everyday folks to do.
I think that's a really good point. And like you said, I mean, whatever floats your boat, if you want to get one of those little portable saunas, I'm all for it, guys. Maybe right now listening to the podcast from your portable sauna in your house, maybe. But for me, it's great. If it helps you, fantastic. But for me, actually, I think the last thing I'd want to say is, I think me and Andrew, we're both really interested in kind of health and fitness and that type of thing. And maybe you are as well. But for me, the most important thing that I've noticed recently is by far sleep. Sleep for me is the absolute number one thing. I've been working really hard on my sleep to try and have a good bedtime routine, to try and go to bed at the same time, because for me, the next day all depends on the night before. And so for me, the one thing that I've noticed has made a big difference to my life is getting better sleep. Nothing compares, I don't think, for me anyway. And I mean, this is me, you know, going off my intuition, but it was one thing that was so hard for me, was to go to bed at a reasonable time. And I've had to work really hard on it. But I would say that for me is the one, sleeping, and maybe I would say water as well throughout the day. But yeah, I like the classic things. Drink enough water, go to bed on time, and eat healthy food. And for me, that's enough. I'm not really into lots of different fads. But if it helps you, then I think great. Anything that helps you feel better and have a better lifestyle, feel better, less stress, I think that has to be a good thing.
For sure. We're completely on the same page there. And yeah, the quality of my life when I have a good night's sleep versus a poor night's sleep, it's night and day. So I'm totally with you there. Anna, let's move to the next trend, which is about technology engagement. And yeah, I think, you know, I said for the last trend, the writing is on the wall. That's a nice expression to add to your vocabulary, guys, if you don't know this one already. The writing is on the wall. And that just means that it's clear to see that this will be happening more and more in the future. Of course, technology is just growing by leaps and bounds year after year. Seems like day after day, really. We're having new technological breakthroughs every day. And of course, we're going to be more engaged with this new technology. Of course, as we have more VR technology coming out, more AR technology coming out, which is augmented reality. So there's virtual reality, which is where you're completely immersed in a virtual environment. Maybe you're wearing a headset like one of the new Apple ones that has come out recently, or there are some other brands that create these headsets as well. And AR stands for augmented reality. And this is where maybe you could use your smartphone or a tablet or something to change the way that reality looks. And Anna, you were telling me some cool examples with AR in regards to shopping for makeup online.
Yeah, so the beauty industry, definitely this is where I've seen a lot of AR being used. And for example, you go to a beauty brand and they have their different products. And a lot of products now people buy online, beauty products, rather than necessarily going into a store. But obviously you've got a problem there, because how do I know if this color looks nice on me? You're kind of taking a bit of a risk when you buy it online. So what they do is they have these different filters that you can put on your face and you can try out the different lip colors. You can have a look. I'm going to say some things here, Angie. I'm not sure if you're aware of them, what they are, but foundation, this is the first layer or one of the first layers that you can put on. And I don't know, they're okay. I'm a little bit skeptical sometimes about the colors and how realistic they are. But I mean, that's one area that I've seen it, but I haven't bought something. I guess the interesting point is I haven't bought something after trying it using an AR filter, because I was like, well, okay, it looks okay, but I still don't 100% trust it. The technology's not quite advanced enough yet where it looks absolutely real.
Right. So maybe it's still in its infancy, this technology, and consumers need to trust it a little bit more before fully accepting it. I've heard, I think IKEA has a feature. Now, I haven't tried this. I've just heard about it, but they have a feature with one of their apps, I believe, where you could take a photo of your room, or maybe you just like even hover the camera over your room and you can see it in real time. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but there's some kind of function where you can decorate your room in your home with their furniture to see how it would look and see how it would fit in your space before you purchase it. And I think that's really cool. You know, I just went through this home renovation project for the last, well, over a year, and we've done a lot of interior decorating and a lot of just imagining and sketching on pen and paper to see what it would try and look like. If you could see that in real time, I think that would be amazing. So I guess it depends on the product, right? Maybe for makeup, you'd be a little skeptical. I think in terms of decorating your room, maybe you'd be more like, yeah, the couch that I see is probably going to be like the couch that I end up getting.
Probably. Yeah, I would definitely use that service. I haven't used it either, Angie, but I think that thing of like buying, because I want to buy some new shelves, for example, for my living room. And I would love to just like see what it actually looks like, because sometimes it's hard to visualize. Another example I just wanted to bring up is another trend we were noticing was coming up was about chatbots and virtual assistants providing customer support, personalized recommendations. And this is a really interesting one for me because, well, as an introvert, I love a chatbot. I'm all about the chatbots. I'm like, if I don't have to call somebody and ask them a question, fantastic. I love them. And even more than that, I like the chatbots, but then they sometimes connect you to an actual person who then helps you with your order or whatever. And I've used that a few times. And I love it. I don't have to call anyone. It's a little box that pops up. I can do my work at the same time. That is one trend that I am all about. Customer service via chat. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I recently had an experience using a chatbot for customer service for the first time. As listeners will know, I just returned from a trip to Australia recently. And when I was flying back home from Australia, I noticed on my ticket, it says that I could have up to 25 kilograms of checked baggage, but it didn't tell me how many bags. So I was like, does this mean I can have unlimited bags? Could I have 25 1 kilogram bags? It didn't tell me. So I went to try and find their customer support number. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to phone this airline to find out the answer to this question. But I went to their website and it said, have a question? Chat with our chatbot. So I asked my question and instantly I got the answer. I didn't have to click around their website. I didn't have to call anybody. And it was awesome. Gave me the information that I needed right away. And yeah, it was a really good experience overall. So
yeah, I've had that as well with airlines, like with the chat, it's great. And I just want to clarify as well, the reason why I said I'm an introvert, so I love chatbots, guys, just so you're aware, is because if I don't have to call, I would rather not make the call. I don't know whether that's an introvert thing, I don't know, but I'm a little bit shy when it comes to calling people. So I'm like, if I don't have to call, that's fine by me.
I don't know if it's like this in England or Spain, but at least in Canada, we have a lot of call centers that are not actually located in Canada. They're located overseas. And often when you have to call customer service, it can be a stressful, difficult time because you're talking with somebody that is located in a different country. Often the quality of the call is really bad. And for me, this is not so much an issue because every day I talk with English non-native speakers and I'm really good at communicating with non-native speakers. But for people who aren't so used to that, they often complain about the accents or a language barrier, and it can be really frustrating for them. So yeah, I think maybe for these people as well, this could be more convenient. And I'm also in the same boat as you, Anna. I'm kind of introverted when it comes to phoning people. For whatever reason, a lot of people have this phone phobia, right? So if I can just chat online and get an answer quickly, then I'm all for it. And let's move on to our fifth and final prediction that we will talk about for this episode. And this prediction is secondhand is in. Secondhand is in. Anna, let's just break this down quickly. Secondhand means a used product, right? Could be some secondhand clothing, secondhand furniture, secondhand electronics. Just means that there was a previous owner. And if something is in, it means it's trendy or it's popular these days. So secondhand is in means that in the future, these researchers are predicting that people will be more willing than they are now to buy and purchase secondhand items. And I found, when researching for this article, I found a quote by a researcher from George Mason University in the USA. Her name is Christine McDaniel. And I thought I'd read this quote for our audience quickly here, Anna. Maybe I won't read the whole thing because it's kind of long, but I will just read the highlights. So Christine McDaniel, the researcher, wrote, "My willingness to pay for new clothes also is not what it once was. My favorite top used to cost $28. On sale, it was $19. Now, I can't even find it, and the closest substitute is $72. There are two great consignment stores in my neighborhood, and online bargains are to be found." So, essentially, I think this echoes what a lot of people maybe are feeling, is that clothes are really, really expensive these days, and often the quality is not really there, and there might be even some ethical issues like we talked about earlier about where it was sourced from or who made it, where it came from. And so because of that, more and more people are turning to secondhand clothing. You can buy a perfectly good shirt from the thrift store that will be a lot cheaper, and yeah, it's perfectly fine. I don't know about you, Anna. I love thrifting, not necessarily for clothes. I do that from time to time, but I'm more a thrifter for furniture and dishware. I love thrifting for like coffee mugs and plates and cutlery. I'm kind of a geek like that. And also electronics. I love vintage electronics, and I love going to the thrift store and searching through the old electronics, the records, the books even. So for me, secondhand has always been in. What about you?
I would say the same. I think secondhand is great. Sometimes I buy really nice secondhand pieces, really nice secondhand clothes, but there is a big industry around secondhand furniture and like other things. We've got a couple of apps here in Spain that are super popular where people just, I don't know, upload a picture of their sofa. They're like, okay, somebody come and pick it up for 50 euros or something like this. So there is that culture around secondhand furniture. And actually, now that I think about it, there are actually a few apps that have come out in the last few years for secondhand clothes. I think it is a growing sector, a growing market, because people want to make the most of things that they have just sitting in their house. And there's a really nice saying that in English, which is one person's rubbish is another person's treasure, or something like that. Maybe I'm not hitting that exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. One man's junk is another man's treasure. So what we say in Canada, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it means like, maybe you don't want it, but somebody else is like, oh, that's the perfect sofa for me. So I think it's great if we can use things that we already have rather than buying new things all the time. I think it's great to promote that, definitely.
I think it's great. However, I'm a little bit sad that it's a growing trend, because it's already hard enough to find amazing things.
More competition for your plates.
Yeah, more competition. And when I was in Australia, my wife and I did a lot of vintage shopping. We didn't really buy too much, but we did go and browse a lot of vintage stores. And there were some amazing vintage stores. They had all kinds of cool, awesome items. Except I know that what these people that operate these stores do is they go to the thrift stores and, you know, they go every single day. And as soon as they find something cool, they buy it and then they bring it to their vintage store and they mark up the price by 10 times and then sell it for more money. So yeah, it was kind of sad. We went to this really amazing, huge thrift store, and right beside it was a vintage store. The difference between a thrift store and a vintage store is usually the price. Usually a thrift store just has donated items and they sell things very cheaply, and the profit that they make goes to support some kind of charity. Whereas a vintage store is more curated. So, you know, a thrift store is just like random stuff. You never know what you're going to find. A vintage store, on the other hand, is curated, and usually all of the products are good quality and fit a specific kind of niche for whatever kind of, you know, era or style you're looking for. But the main difference is the price. So these vintage store and this thrift store were side by side, and I just knew that the staff from that vintage store was going over to the thrift store every day to pick it. And yeah, just sell them next door for 10 times the money. So more and more of this happens, I'm going to be a little bit sad, but overall it's a good thing. So it's okay.
And just so you know, guys, as well, in the UK, we would call those, we say vintage shops and we say charity shops. So we don't have the term thrift store in UK culture. I just thought that was an interesting point to highlight. We normally say charity shops. A charity is a voluntary organization that, as you said just before, Andrew, they raise money to spend on certain social causes, for example. But that's the terminology that we would use in the UK rather than the thrift terminology, which is more American, Canadian vocab, just so you know.
Cool. Yeah, good point. And in Australia, did you know this, Anna? They call it an op shop.
Op shop.
Can you guess what that means? Op shop?
No. What does it mean?
It stands for opportunity shop. So you have an opportunity to find a treasure. So I really liked that, an op shop.
I like that. Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Of course, the Aussies have the cool slang, right? Okay, well, with that said, everybody, I think that will bring us to a close for this episode. So we hope that you enjoyed our discussion and found it beneficial for improving your English fluency. And please remember that this episode was made available for everyone thanks to our fantastic member community. And without our members, Qlips wouldn't be possible. And as a show of our appreciation, Anna and I are going to keep our conversation going for a little bit longer in the ad-free version of this episode. As a Qlifts member, you can get the ad-free audio just by logging into the dashboard and finding it there.
If you're not a member yet, consider joining to access our really helpful study guides and transcripts, fun bonuses, and to support all the work we do here at Qlifts.
Of course, there are other ways that you can show your support as well. You could follow us on Instagram or YouTube, join the fun discussions that we're having every day over on our Discord server, let your friends who are learning English know about Qlifts, or you could leave us a 5-star rating and a glowing review on your favorite podcast app.
We'll be back very soon with a new episode. Until then, keep learning, keep supporting, and we look forward to chatting with you on Discord. Bye for now.
Bye, everybody.